This is James Corbett of The Corbett Report. It's the 28th of March 2009, and today I'm talking with Bob Chapman. Bob Chapman was the world's largest silver and gold stockbroker and author of a hugely successful financial newsletter before his retirement in 1988. In 1991, he started the International Forecaster out of retirement boredom, and today he is firmly established as one of the world's leading authors, speakers, and analysts on the subjects of business, finance, economics, and politics. Mr. Chapman, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me today on The Corbett Report.
Well, you're welcome, and it's very nice to be here.
All right. As it's your first time on The Corbett Report, why don't we start by introducing the International Forecaster to my listeners who may not have heard of it before?
Well, the International Forecaster has been in existence almost 20 years, and it's about business, finance, economic, social, political issues all over the world. We publish via email twice a week, runs around 35 pages each time. And we have a hard copy for those who are not on the internet that goes out twice a month as well. And people who would like to get a free introductory copy can go to our site, theinternationalforecaster.com. That's the international, FORECASTER.com, or email us at bob@intforecaster.com. That's bob@intforecaster.com. Or those who are in the United States can call 800-375-4188. That's toll-free, 800-375-4188.
All right. Well, Bob Chapman, today on the program, we're talking about how to survive the economic collapse that is unfolding as we speak and is already threatening to completely destroy whatever was left of the actual real industrial economy of North America. But in order to have any chance of surviving this, I think we need to be as informed as possible about how we got here in the first place. So from your own analysis, what have been some of the key events that have led us to this economic precipice?
Well, first of all, the people who have deliberately caused this have done this for the last 1,000 years that we know of. And this is the method of attaining additional wealth and power and controlling the masses. And it's been done over and over and over again, so it's nothing new. And this particular time, the elements have been, number one, the introduction of what used to be called British colonialism, which is now called free trade, globalization, offshoring, and outsourcing. This began in the 1960s under GATT, furthered under WTO in 1986, and you see the damage today, what it has wrought upon the economies of the United States, Europe, and Canada. And the experience of America has been that tariffs have worked extremely well in protecting markets and jobs and a standard of living that is unparalleled in history. And they did try free trade and globalization from 1790 to 1800 and get rid of it for the same problems that we're experiencing today. The second element of the downfall of the dollar and the world economy was the end of the attachment of the U.S. dollar to the gold standard on August 15, 1971. And since then, all we've seen is a degenerative pattern along with the free trade and globalization that has brought about a tremendous amount of debt, governmental, corporate, and individual. There's been a lot of elements along the way. If the people in Washington or the power behind government had wanted to fix the problem, they had the perfect opportunity in 1991-92 to do so by purging the system of the excesses and malallocation of wealth and investment, and they didn't want to do that. And then we experienced the stock market boom in the late 1990s, which was created through excessive money and credit expansion. And then when that fell asunder, we saw the Federal Reserve and the banking system creating leverage of under the fractional banking of 40 and 50 to 1 as opposed to 8 or 10 to 1 during normal times. And so the result of that, along with very low, unusually low interest rates, we had a real estate boom which ended up in a bust. And those things were accompanied by the use of derivatives, which is something relatively new on the scene over the last 20 years in the way that we know them today. And that was also helped by the connivance of the Federal Reserve, which is privately owned, incidentally, and the banking community and the regulatory agencies and the rating agencies. And so today we find ourselves in a position where we have many bond investments, which are now called toxic waste, that have burdened the balance sheets of lenders and buyers both, and that would be in the form of collateralized debt obligations, which are bonds which are made up of parts of mortgages in real estate. That's both residential as well as commercial. And we are witnessing the expansion of debt by $13 trillion already in the last 22 months to bail out the banking system and not the economy. And all of the skullduggery that goes along with it, companies like AIG being bailed out when they shouldn't have been, and so on and so forth. So we're in a fix. They're not doing anything to fix it. The dollar is going to go back down in value as we go along. Gold and silver are going to go higher as a result because they're the only real money. This talk of an international currency, or at least an international unit to trade with, because holders of dollar-denominated assets are very unhappy about the fact that the dollar has, over a period of time, tended to be lower in value, and the creditors see this tremendous outpouring of debt and creation of money and credit, and they think there's going to be inflation in a big way in the future, and they're right. And so they want some sort of an international unit. And this coming week at the G20 meeting, you're going to see a meeting that probably will turn into a fistfight. And these people who are arguing are all like-minded, but it's a question of why did the U.S. financial people get us in this mess? And we want out of it, and we want out of the dollar. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the outcome is. But no matter what it is, it's not going to be good. And what you're seeing is really only the beginning. We're in depression already. We spent 2 years in recession from February of 07 to February of 09, and then the depression started a couple of months ago. And so that's going to last for a long, long time, probably 10 or 15 or more years. And I see that they're going to expand the warfare in the Middle East, which will end up being a World War III as a distraction from all of the economic and financial problems that the United States and the world is beset with.
Well, you made a number of important points there, and I think my listeners will be familiar with some of the pieces of that puzzle, but it's good to have them put together in one narrative like that. Well, picking up on the idea of free trade and globalization, you had an interesting post on the internationalforecaster.com on March 18th, which stated that the upcoming G20 meeting in London would be the end of free trade and globalization. Why do you think this is, and what new driving force in international finance do you see emerging from the G20?
Well, they're really separate. The important thing is that China, Russia, in particular, and other nations are putting up tariffs. And they're also, like France, subsidizing their automobile industry, as is the United States. And this is the sort of thing that gets it going. And WTO, which is the donor round, have been going on for like 6 years and getting nowhere, because what the larger nations want to do is hold their agricultural entities in place and not open up their markets to foreign agriculture. And at the same time, they want to destroy the agricultural base of agrarian societies. That's suicide. We just saw that in NAFTA with Mexico. They made a great deal for the industrialists who are exporting 80 to 85% of what Mexico produces to the United States. The problem is to put all the small manufacturers out of business, and part of the deal was that American subsidized corporate farms could export to Mexico. Well, Mexico couldn't compete. And so what happened was that 70% of the farms in Mexico went out of business, and all those workers, most of whom were uneducated, all become illegal aliens in the United States. And that was dumber than dumb. And so that's why the donor round has not worked and won't work. But this has been coming. I know that free trade and globalization is still going on by transnational corporations. IBM's a good one. They'll be totally out of the United States by the end of the next year. They'll have nothing. And they'll be sending all their profits to offshore accounts in the Cayman Islands, and they'll probably never pay the taxes in the United States again. And they'll make gobs of money because the markets are wide open, and they can use slave labor elsewhere to produce what they can produce in the United States. So the only way you can stop that sort of thing, or the manufacturing of cars elsewhere or whatever, that's tariffs on goods and services, the only way you stop that is to put up tariffs. It's pretty simple. And do we really care whether the rest of the world does business with us? And it also means that all of these transnationals, if they want to do business in the United States, they're going to have to probably go back into the United States, because all the advantages they gained offshore, particularly in the labor category, will be neutralized. And so that is the secret, and it's one of the secrets to revamping the American economic empire. Now, we're being bled white by transnational conglomerates.
Well, absolutely, and it's clear from everything that you've just outlined that the macroeconomic situation is beginning to spiral out of control. And, of course, with the recent revelation that the privately owned central banks are now openly monetizing the debt in the next stage of the inevitable slide into Weimar Republic-style hyperinflation, let's zoom in for a moment to the microeconomic situation of the individual in the economy. It's my position that the best chance at surviving this collapse is to purchase the 3 G's, gold, guns, and grub. And by grub, I mean food, but that doesn't start with a G. So at any rate, do you think such a recommendation is off the mark?
No. No, I've been telling people to do this ever since I got them out of the stock market in 2000 into gold and silver coins and shares and bullion. And I've been after people to buy freeze-dried, dehydrated foods and put them away, and to have a water filter in case pure water isn't available, and also have a method of defending your family, preferably an assault weapon, or what they call an assault weapon, which is really not, but it looks like one, because it's semi-automatic. And for the most part, I'll put it that way. And that's the first thing you have to do. That's your insurance policy. And I get letters every day from people, gee, I never thought I'd get laid off. I've been with General Electric for 28 years, but I listened to you. I sold my house 2.5 years ago at the top of the market, and I put my money in gold and silver shares and coins. They're all up in value. And I put in dehydrated, freeze-dried foods. I've got weapons, and I've got a water filter, And so I can live for the next 2 years without working. And so that's what this is all about, and that's what people should be doing. And I know the time is getting shorter, but it's never too late.
It certainly isn't, and the more forewarned we are, the more forearmed we are, certainly. So let's get into some specifics then. Silver and gold are obviously two metals that you know very well, having been the largest silver and gold stockbroker in the world for decades. What advice would you have for people who are thinking of getting into the silver and gold market for the first time?
Well, I think the dealer that you deal with is extremely important. And we recommend dealers in coins. We have a few of them that we've dealt with for many years. And they are honest. They will help you on a personal and suitability basis. The delivery is excellent. And the quality of what you buy, you'll get what you pay for. And the same thing with stockbrokers. I have a couple of people who I recommend, men who've got over 35 years experience. And incidentally, I never get paid anything by anybody for recommending or doing anything. The only people who pay me are the people who subscribe to the newsletter. And people who email me, I will answer everybody's questions. And if need be, I'll ask for a telephone number so I can call. Because sometimes people will say to me, well, I got an insurance policy and it's got $200,000 cash value in it, and I'm 74 years old, what do I do? Well, it's not that easy to answer. So I have to write back and say, Mr. Jones, please send me a phone number. I'm going to call you. And that's what I do.
Well, that's an incredible service to be providing. But, of course, everyone's economic situation is unique, and it does require that kind of one-on-one analysis sometimes. So that's an incredible service, and I'm sure that some of my listeners would be happy to take you up on that. As the Austrian School of Economics is fond of pointing out, fiat paper money only has value if we believe the con men who are trying to sell it to us. But gold, of course, will always retain its value, even in a depression. But of course, in the hyperinflation economy that we're moving into, the paper will be worth nothing. But at the moment, we're still living in a paper economy. So for the average American family today, what percentage of a person's wealth do you think should be in precious metals? What percentage should be in stocks and investments? And what percentage should be kept liquid as cash?
Well, along the way, it's been different numbers. But now, let me put it this way. All of my assets are in gold and silver related assets. And I don't know any place else to go to. You can't go into annuities and insurance because it could go under. You can't go in the stock market unless you want to short the market, which we've been unbelievably successful at. Our newsletter recommendations have made more money for people than any newsletter in history. It's incredible. And we're very happy about that, and we hope it continues. But other than that, I don't know where any place else to go. And if anybody else knows something better, please let me know about it, because the currencies are all fiat. Even the euro is only 7% backed by gold, and the rest of the currencies have no backing. Like you just said, Jim, that the currencies are only as good as the confidence that is backing the currency. And today, very few people have any confidence in any currency. People who understand what's going on. And as you've probably seen over the past year, there has been a contraction in the availability of gold and silver related assets such as coins and bars, as there's been a time when you couldn't get any. And the premiums now are higher than they've ever been, and I think they're going to stay there. Because each day, people listen to broadcasts like this, and they say, gee, I knew something was wrong, and now I know what it is. So I'm going to go out and get some coins. And there are people all over the world who are listening to these broadcasts. I do 20 of them a week, plus my publication. We're reaching people all over the world, and people all over the world who are listening and understand are doing that. And that is going to continue, because the only real money is gold and silver, and it's going to come down to that. I mean, you see the G20 meeting coming up. They're all going to fight with each other over whether they're going to have another international trading unit, we'll call it. And what good is that going to do if they take the 7 or 10, let's say 10 major currencies of the world, where none of them except one is backed by anything? I mean, you're back to square one again. You've traded a fiat dollar for 10 fiat currencies. There's no progress. Maybe it'll extend the timeline as to whether the entire world economy eventually goes into deflationary depression. We're in inflationary depression right now, and they might be able to extrapolate that out 4, 5, 6 years. I don't think so, but they may be able to. But once deflation takes over, the currencies are going to be worthless.
Absolutely. Well, of course, as you pointed out earlier, it's being engineered to play out in this way. And of course, it's going to play into the Illuminists' hands eventually. And earlier you mentioned that that gold and guns and food are people's insurance policy in this current economic climate. But now you're also saying that there's no really other place for people to put their money other than gold and silver. So are you in effect saying that all we can do at the moment is to sort of buy our insurance policy and wait to ride this out? Or is there anything that people can do proactively to position themselves to actually potentially even profit from this situation?
Well, I think two things. You can short the market, as I said. Very few people are mentally equipped to do that, even, you know, with my instructions, because it's like always betting against the favorite or running on a bad track. And most people aren't emotionally prepared to hope that the stock that they have just shorted goes down. And so that has a limited application, you might say. And so what are we after here? We're after preservation of capital. We're after preservation of wealth. That's what we're after. And so gold and silver represent that. There will come a time during a deflationary time that, and that's probably 2 to 3 years away, that silver will begin to come down from some higher level because it is a semi-monetary metal. And people would keep dimes, quarters, and halves, or silver eagles around just in case they have to use them for currency or barter. But gold, if you look back at the Great Depression that we had, and this is going to be a bigger one, you'll see that gold went up 100% twice, or doubled twice, and everything else went down 60 to 100%. And so people who owned gold during, and not just in the United States, worldwide, during the 1930s, made a substantial amount of money besides protecting their wealth. And I know that in the United States there was a call-in of gold, and only about 25% of the people turned their gold in. And many people during the time did own gold because it was common. People would walk around with $20 gold pieces in their pocket. And it's interesting that during that period of time, the mining stocks were exempt, and Homestake in 1929, which was a large gold mining company, since absorbed by another company, went from $36 to $630 a share. So there were great gains made in gold and also gold shares. And so there is the possibility of appreciation, but the main thing is to keep your assets intact. And that's really what gold is all about and has been about for the last 6,000 years.
It certainly has. Gold is the only currency that retains its value over time, and fiat paper money certainly never will do that. Mr. Chapman, it's an incredibly fascinating conversation. I'm sure we could go on for many hours talking about it, but let's leave the conversation at that point. Tell us once again about the International Forecaster and how people can get a hold of a subscription to that newsletter.
Well, you can get a free introductory copy by going to the site, and that is theinternationalforecaster.com, International, FORECASTER.com. You can email us at bob@intforecaster.com. That's bob@intforecaster.com. Or you can call 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188, toll-free.
All right. Well, Mr. Chapman, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today, and we will certainly be following your work in the future.
Well, thank you very much.